Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
What are you laughing at?
I'm
laughing at me. You know, I think something wrong with my brain.
Yes,
I gotta go get scanned.
Yes, it's called CTE.
Seriously, I just make myself laugh thinking in my mind, like I'm just like something's wrong with me. I'm delusional half the time or something, because I just thought to myself. I said, "Poor Susan, Michael, and Kelly." By the time all this is over with, Susan gonna be in the kitchen cooking collard greens, smoking cornbread. Travis gonna be like, hey, "Man, hey, LZ and Keisha, Susan, I don't want what's that stuff they eat?
Beet salad and Caesar
salad. I don't want no beet salad. I want some collard greens with neck bones in it, some black eyed peas. Want hot water cornbread. Girl, I don't want no Jiffy."
Key, why don't you share with the people the new lingo? Just clean it up.
No, I don't think lingo. That's really a great idea. Look, if this whole thing results in me getting fed more often, I'm all for it.
By the time you come out of this, between the pandemic and dealing with us, and now all this protesting and racial injustice and the whole thing that you got to deal with on a daily with us, you're going to go home. And you're going to be, I'm telling you, you're going to put the fist in the air. And as soon as she say something, you're going to be like, yo, you tripping. Like, you're going to come with the lingo and everything. And then you're going to Michael, you're going to get mad at Michael. He's going to ask you for something. And you're going to tell him, you're going to say, if I gave you a rope, brother, you're going to want to be a cowboy. That's what you're going
to. There you go. There it is.
That's not exactly.
Let's just say he said it a little bit different.
I said a little bit different. I had to clean it up for radio.
Travis is shaving right now. What you guys don't know is he's going to grow out one of those Color Me Bad beards. He's going to have it all trimmed up looking like John B. He's going to start looking like John B. And he looked like Robin Thicke, and we're going to have to decide whether or not he's for the culture.
It's so funny. I picked up food yesterday, Taco Tuesday. I was picking up some tacos and stuff from Los Agaves out in Westlake. And there was a white cat. So I knew it was a sister, right? Because her back was to me. She had the curly fro, and the baby was, you know, a light-skinned baby, you know, more on the lighter side because both of them was light-skinned. But I kept looking at the dude, and I kept saying to myself, I'm like, damn, I don't think he white, but he might be black. No, he white because he got red hair, red beard. And so when he saw me, he started talking. He's like, what's up, man? But it was a white dude, right? And I just fell out laughing at myself. I said, oh, he reminded me of John B. and all the rest of them. And it was the funniest thing. You had to be there to see it. It was the funniest thing, though. And I told him, I was like, oh, I see you, dude. You with us. And he was like, yeah, for sure. And he started talking the lingo and everything. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm.
I used to date one of those John B. wannabes. And at first, he was real cool. But then there was a moment where I felt like I was in a black off competition. Like he was trying to out black me. I put in Public Enemy. He's got to put in X Clan. I'm like, what the hell's going on over here now?
Yeah, don't worry, Travis. I'm gonna make sure that Susan in the collard greens, she don't put roasted walnuts.
I was gonna say no cashews on top.
No
of the
cashews
greens,
on
right?
top of the wall.
No cashews. No cashews. Good. Man, leave my sister-in-law alone, man. Leave her alone.
You send the recipes, and she'll get to work on that. Hopefully, you know, LZ, you mentioned it a minute ago. There's an iconic picture of all the men that you mentioned: Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and Bill Russell. It was 4 years ago today, as a matter of fact, June 3rd, where Muhammad Ali passed. And we spent a lot of time talking about this time. It's different. This time, there are people that were not directly affected that have been equally outraged, that it has spread from just Minneapolis to other cities in this country to other parts of the world, and people are responding to it. I wonder if in that picture, in that moment, in that political and cultural environment, whether they thought it was going to be different, because that picture's 50 years old or thereabouts. And here we are in 2020, not in the 1960s, and we're having the same conversations.
Yeah, I mean, listen. If we look at this, Travis, as an individualized moment in time, we can certainly say that this is the same thing over and over again. But I personally don't look at it like that. I look at it as a continuum. I look at it as a conversation we've been having essentially since the Emancipation Proclamation. It's a continual morphing, if you will, of the system. And every significant social justice moment in this country's history has gone through the same cycle. Whether you're talking about women's rights and their right to vote, whether you're talking about the civil rights movement, whether you're talking about LGBTQ movements, there's a progression, and then it's met with resistance, and then there's a regression. And then there's a progression met with resistance, and then a regression. When it comes to race in this country, the proclamation was a progression, and it was met with regression and opposition through the Jim Crow laws. And then we abolished the Jim Crow laws, and then it got slick and created other laws. They didn't characterize as Jim Crow, but there were other laws that had the same effect. Progression, resistance, regression. So that's been the ebb and flow of this conversation, and that's where we are today. Even if you were to look at, say, the historic election of President Obama, a lot of people characterized that as a progression. And then you started to see a lot of racism pop up visually and vocally in ways that we hadn't seen recently. Well, that was response to the progression. So there's the resistance, and now we have what appears to be a level of regression when you see all the killings that are happening in the street being captured on videotape. But the thing that I've learned by being a student of history is that the progression always moves further ahead than the regression pushes us back. So we, as long as we keep progressing, there is progress being made. Don't be discouraged by the regression. That's part of the process. It's like going to the gym. If you're doing it right, it's going to hurt. But you can't build muscle without that hurt. If you're going to the gym and you come home and you ain't sore, you ain't do nothing. You might sweat. You might sweat a little bit. You know, you might feel good, but you haven't had progression because you haven't had that pain. You haven't torn no tissue, and so that could be rebuilt bigger and stronger. All we're doing right now is tearing our muscles, ripping them apart. It hurts. We cry. We're sore. But we also know we're on the path of getting bigger and stronger because that's just the way it works.
And that speaks to what I've been saying about that these things are changing to move forward with the progression, much like LZ is saying. We're going to progress so far, and then there's going to be a dip in there somewhere. There's going to be some foolishness that comes along, and then we're going to have to kickstart it again. We may not be around to see it in the end, but we will be laying the foundation for it to get to the end. And I think that we can go all the way back to President Obama. You can go where we at now in government. And then you can look to where we're going to be, hopefully, with government moving forward. The police brutality that's been going on around for so long, you know, the Four talked about it, obviously, back in the 60s. There wasn't a lot of athletes willing to risk their careers. O.J. Simpson wasn't a guy who was willing to risk his career to be involved in some of that, because that wasn't his deal. He was more worried about being the juice. But those other four, the Muhammad Ali's, the Bill Russell, the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, and the Jim Browns, they risked their careers. But look what happened to them in the end, and the rewards and the foundation that they laid for those to come after. And then those that came after risked some things and laid a foundation for those that came after them. And the ones that are now here with us today, the LeBron Jameses or whomever else, ain't necessarily risk their careers because they built on the career. They built their careers on people that laid it down before them so they could now have a stronger voice and a more secure voice like they have today. And now they could lay the foundation for my sons and daughter who protest with me yesterday to not have to worry about risking their careers because they'll be lifted up so high. And it'll just keep going. Layers will just keep getting stacked.
you know, Key, you talk about the conversations that you've had with your children. Magic Johnson was on CNN yesterday and was having a similar conversation. Let's take a listen to Magic yesterday about that conversation that black parents have to have with their children about what you do if you're stopped by the police.
Well, it doesn't matter if I'm Magic Johnson or not. My kids, just like I am, still a black man, right? And yes, I had that conversation because it's important that I have that conversation with both EJ and Andre. If you pulled over, make sure, you know, you got your hands out of the window, make sure that you comply.
I mean, this is one of the most famous men in the world having that conversation with his kids. And this is where I kind of start to fall back into that other point where it's like, here we go again, that if Magic Johnson still has to have this conversation with his children, and we're in the same place that we were 10 years ago, 20, 40, 50.
Yeah, and my mom.
But that's not true, Travis. It's not true, though.
What's not
yesterday,
true?
Yesterday, last night, the city of Ferguson just elected its first black mayor in the city's history. When I was covering Michael Brown, starting with his death, starting all the way through the protests, and then I was there with Don Lemon, and we sat there on television, and we covered the funeral. And when I was there covering through all that time, the thing that struck me was the lack of involvement from the African Americans in the community. I was like, when I finally had an opportunity to see the mayor and talk to the mayor, I was trying to figure out how in the hell does this city that's over black and Democratic ended up with a young white mayor? There's nothing wrong with being young, white, or a mayor. I was just really curious as to how that happened because the city was predominantly black and Democratic. And what I found out from my reporting was that the people weren't even bothering voting. Or there was also moments in which they were trying to suppress the vote. That was during Ferguson uprising. Last night, there is a black mayor who gets to call herself Madam Mayor. That's progression. So we're not exactly where we were. And there's plenty of examples like that spread all around this country. Right here, Jackie Lacey, first black woman elected as district attorney. Now, we can talk about her record, but certainly it was a historic moment. The district attorney's office in Los Angeles has been around for like hundreds of years, and she's the first one. So there is progression that we can point to and go, there, we've moved forward. There, we've moved forward. There is more open. People are getting more involved. So we're not in the same place. We're having some of the same conversations. That's part is true. But just because you're having the same conversations doesn't mean that you're in the same place.
Well, I think
we're in a different place.
I think, LZ, from a worrying about the cop standpoint, we're still in the same place. My mother had the same conversations with me many years ago when I first started driving about getting pulled over and what to do, about pulling into open spaces with people in gas stations. If you had to drive two blocks with your hazard zone, pull into a gas station, and they can question you with gas station cameras and people around. That conversation is still going on today that was going on 20-something years ago that was going on even before that. I think that's what Travis is saying. That conversation
Magic had
with his
that.
Kids is still going on. That needs to stop, and the only way it's going to stop is by reinforcing certain things with the police so we don't have to feel fearful when we get in our cars that we're going to get tased or something along those lines.
Let's continue this conversation. Plus, we'll talk about Vic Fangio's comments that he does not see a racism issue inside the NFL. That's all coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, continue our conversation about the recent events here in town, across the country. Of course, George Floyd's murder last week as well. I'm always struck by some of the comments that come out. Some of them are incredibly powerful and meaningful and inspiring, and you feel good. And then you hear some other things, like what the head coach of the Denver Broncos say, that just make you want to hit your head on the table and smack your forehead. It just because they are so out of touch and so tone deaf and so just unaware of the situation that's going on. Let's take very quickly, let's take another listen to Vic Fangio, who was asked about whether or not he thinks there is a race problem in the NFL.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
That is naive at best and just incredibly ignorant otherwise, because this idea, well, you get what you get and you earn what you earn, that is the go-to statement for everybody that, well, I did it on my own. I went out and made it happen on my own, and I was able to do it. Why can't they do it? Why can't they find a way to make it happen? It's just that same old you-know-what over again in a different form.
He's talking to his team, though. You know that? That right there, that little you get what you get, you are what you all that, that's coach speak 101 when you trying to break down your roster as training camp starts to close. That's all that is. You get what you get. You if you're good at it, you're gonna play. That's all that is.
But he was addressing the issue of race in the NFL. He wasn't talking about playing time. He wasn't talking about getting on the field.
But that goes to speak to the old head mentality, the old fraternity mentality that he's been around for the 41 years that he's been coaching. Okay, I could just point to something simple and plain. Lamar Jackson, he was told to play a different position. And he the MVP. He was a different position. And turned out to be the MVP of the league at the quarterback spot. After being told to play another position. Now, is that subtle racism because they're so used to having white quarterbacks in different styles? Or is that just an assessment of a talent that they didn't foresee being able to play the position? See, some would argue that it's somewhat has something to do with discrimination and racism, because for so many years you was always told to go play another position that you couldn't play the quarterback spot. So you never was given the opportunity to. It's just like nowadays with the coaching. If you're not given the opportunity to be a coach or an executive, you'll never know if they can be. If Ozzie Newsome was never given the opportunity, he wouldn't be one of the greatest general managers in the history of the league if he was never given that opportunity. But Art Modell decided to give him the opportunity to be. Vic Fangio has the opportunity to hire who he wants to hire, but he elects to do something different and then use an excuse about that, basically saying that you're not good enough to get hired, so why are you complaining about it?
You want to know why there's racism in the NFL? And his statement sounds ridiculous. The very name of Washington's football team is a racial slur. And people have told them that for years and years and years. And they try to couch it as it's an honor. It's our way of honoring Native Americans. Well, then you go back in history. This is why my profession is so important. And you look at the old news articles where the original owner of the football team straight up said he was a separatist. He was a racist. And he straight up said he didn't like them and he just wanted to use them as a logo. That's what the owner said when he named the team. So it started out exactly what it was supposed to have been, an insult. And yet, you see the NFL safeguarding this slur, this racist slur, because what, it's good for business? So I mean, the very idea that he thinks there's no racism in the NFL when he's got a team in the nation's capital called named after a racist slur is ridiculous. And beyond that, even if you want to say, okay, well, let's not talk about slurs and things like that because people aren't using slurs at each other and blah, 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 blah. Okay, all right. That is one form of racism. But there are many other forms of racism. Key just alluded to one of them. Perception dictating your decision-making. The Boys Club that doesn't seem to be presenting enough opportunities, not handouts, but just opportunities to become top coaches in this league.
I'm Look at his get staff. Into
ownership group. you know what I'm saying? Like there's so much evidence to it. It's almost laughable if it wasn't so serious. And the reason why it's serious is because, to your point, Travis, he's in a position to actually do something about it, and he doesn't appear to have done so.
Yeah, it's staggering to me. That you look at the staff. There are 24 positions available here.
You're really looking at that now, Travis.
Yeah, well, you look at four. And here's the guy. And let's just call it what it is. You got the guy that's the decision maker, right? He's the boss. He is the head of management in this particular organization when it comes to his coaching staff. He's got 24 positions to fill in a league where, and I don't know the exact number, but what is it? What are we talking? 70% of the players are black? And yet you have four positions out of your 24 that are filled by black men. And you're telling me that there's not an issue in your organization. I mean, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And I get that you talked about the nepotism, Key, and that they're going to hire the guy that drove them to practice. And they're going to hire the guy whose cousin's brother's nephew, you know, is a friend of his. And that's kind of, I guess, the way that the world works to a certain degree. But this is an organization, a league where 70 some odd percent of the players are black. And you've got 4 of 24 black coaches. And you're telling me there's not a problem. That's not talking to your team. That is willful ignorance or worse.
But you know, a guy who gets it, who happens to be a white coach, but he gets it, is Bruce Arians. He gets it all the way across the board, from women coaches to black coordinators to black position coaches and white position coaches. He ain't going to issue no statement like that because he gets it. Both his coordinators are brothers. He's got women strength coaches, women assistant coaches at positions. He's diversified as they come. But Vic Fangio, on the other hand, he's got to now deal with some backlash that's going to come and hit him and bite him so hard with his team. Because the one thing he doesn't have Bill Belichick's record. See, and that's a problem. And maybe he don't give a damn. Maybe he doesn't care because he's been in it 41 years and it doesn't matter to him.
Clearly. Byron Scott, former Laker head coach, NBA champion, scheduled to join us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, as promised, we're joined right now by former NBA head coach, multiple-time NBA world champion, Byron Scott, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
What's up, B. Scott?
Man, I can't tell what's happening.
Nothing. Just trying to get through everything that we've been going through since I was born. I mean, you know, just trying to get through it one day at a time.
I feel you. I'm in the same boat.
You know, being from L.A., being from Inglewood, and obviously been in the city your entire life, have you ever gone through some sort of police brutality, pulling you over while driving, anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, I grew up in Inglewood, you know, so I've been pulled over numerous times. I was pulled over, I think the last time that I was pulled over, that I was really upset. I wouldn't say scared. I was just upset. was when I was 21. I was pulled over by these two cops, 3 in the morning. Keyshawn, you remember Carlos and Charlie's coming back from the club.
Yes.
You know, I was a youngster, and I got pulled over at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the officers asked me to get out of my car. I asked them, you know, what's the problem? You know, what did I do? Because I wasn't speeding or anything. Wouldn't give me an answer. And both of them had their hands on their guns. You know, I had to get out the car. Threw me against the car, frisked me and everything. The one cop put his light, you know, his flashlight in my car. And I, you know, a guy that knows the law extremely well, but I did know unless you have, you know, some type of form of warrant, you know, you can't search my car. So I told the guy, get his light out of my car. And he said, you got something to hide? I said, no. And so after they finished searching me and getting my license, your driver's license and my insurance, they went back to the car, and I could look at them both kind of looking up and down and look. And then they came back and said, okay, you can go. You know, and I, you know, I persisted because I remember my dad always telling me, he said, when they pull you over, he never said if, he said when they pull you over, just be very compliant. Don't start anything, because he knew I was a hard head. And I said, so what'd you pull me over for? And they said, well, we got a report of a white Mercedes being stolen. And I looked at him. I said, this car is red, you know, and I got in the car, man, and just, you know, peeled off. And that was the last time that I got, you know, really pulled over and pulled out of my car, and frisked and everything like that. You know, but I've been pulled over, you know, since then. I was, you know, I wouldn't say harassed in high school, but, you know, just where I was always, you know, cops always kind of pulled us over or surrounded us or asked us where we were going. Cause it was always me and my boys, you know, we're going to, going to the gyms to play basketball. So it was always 6, 7, and 8 of us. And we would get pulled over for no apparent reason, but besides the fact that we were young black kids walking down the street, going to the gym, you know? So, you know, I understand everything that's going on. I understand the process. I understand the anger. I understand the hurt. I understand the pain because we've been dealing with this for 400 plus years. And I understand the reason to protest. You know, we had a young man on video lose his life, and that image will stay in my mind for the rest of my life, especially the part where they brought the gurney and they grabbed his limp body and put it on. That right there just irked me, you know. So it's amazing to me a little bit, to be honest to you guys, that it took this long for us to react the way we react. I mean, we've heard the words, I can't breathe, before. We've heard those words before, you know, so I'm sitting here every day watching what's going on and hoping that in some form or fashion that they do hear us right now and that some of these laws will be changed with this police brutality and the way that they treat us as a people. Because, you know, as far as I can tell, you know, there really is only one race, and that's the human race. And that's all we're asking, is to be treated fairly and equally. And that, you know, it said justice for all, and we're still not seeing that on a day-to-day basis.
Coach, we certainly know that, you know, your socioeconomic status doesn't insulate you from this type of racism. You know, your story, Jamal Wilkes' story, I've written about my story, Keyshawn has talked about his story. Like, so it doesn't really matter what your education level is, your level of fame, money, none of that. No one's insulated right from this. My question for you is, what would you like to see in terms of policy or procedures addressed when it comes to criminal justice reform that listeners can focus in on? And hopefully let's talk about solutions, because we all know what the problem is.
You know, I really don't know. I think everything that we've tried so far to this particular point has been has gone unnoticed. I think, you know, it lasts for, you know, a week or two or a month or a year, and then everything, you know, seems to go back to normal. When I mean normal, you know, it's what we saw, you know, a week ago. I don't think we're going to ever be treated fairly in this country. And we've helped build this country, you know, with our blood, sweat, and tears. So as far as, you know, reform and what type of policies need to be in place, I have no idea. I really don't. It's mind-boggling to me to try to figure out what do they want. First of all, I'm trying to figure out, why do they hate us so much as a people? You know, is it because they're scared of us? Is it because that they know that we are not going to take this anymore? I'm trying to figure that out first. But as far as any reform or any policies to be put in place to make the playing fields equally, I don't know. I can't put my finger on that.
Byron Scott joining us here on the morning show. And Byron, with that in mind, and like you said, it's gone unnoticed. Does this moment in time, the George Floyd situation, the situations that have unfolded since then, seeing the people that are involved in the protests, the different types of people that are involved in the protests, and Key and LZ and I have been having this conversation for the entire week. Does this feel differently? Does this feel like a moment to you in history where maybe there is an opportunity for some change? Or, like you mentioned a minute ago, you fast forward a week, a month, a year from now, are we in the exact same spot?
I mean, at this particular moment, to be honest with you, looking at everything that I'm seeing on TV and with the way the protesters are going around the world, you know, I'm looking at New Zealand. You know, the other day, you know, with a huge mass of people protesting this. I mean, so this is, you know, with the death of George Floyd, which is so unfortunate, it has sparked something. There's no doubt about that. It definitely sparked something in us, and maybe that's something that, you know, enough is enough. But do I see this being a way of maybe this make some of these changes? I mean, I'm an optimist. Always have been, you know, so I'm hoping and I'm praying that it is. I really am. But, you know, like I said, you know, it's just like, you know, so many things that go on, you know, when you make those changes, yeah, they last for a little period of time and then everything goes back to normal. You know, so I'm hoping, you know, and like I said, I'm hoping and praying by watching everything and listening to everything that's going on right now. You know, we're over a week now, these protests. And I think these protests, from what I've gathered, will continue until the other three officers are arrested. I think it could have been over with by now, if the people in Minnesota, you know, if they took action a little bit sooner and arrested the other three cops as well, you know, and charged them with, which still is crazy to me, third degree murder. I think is ridiculous, but I think if we wouldn't be seeing what we're seeing right now, because that's all we want is justice. Yeah, I mean, justice. So I'm hoping and praying that that is the case, and that this can be a change, you know. But also, you know, we also thought that in 1992. You know, we thought that in 1992, and 28 years later, here we are. You know, hoping the same thing. You know, by seeing another black man lying in the streets with cops around him, beating him or with a knee on his neck, and we saw the outcome of it, you know, a week ago.
Coach, I don't want to let you go, you know, in a down-spirited way. And I couldn't help but notice you recently purchased a new home. And as I look at these pictures in the LA Times, I see some nice little areas for barbecuing and social gatherings. So I just want you to know, once we return to normal, if I need to wear a mask, I'll wear a mask. I'm just expecting to be at the, you know, the housewarming party when, you know, you get things right.
Listen, LZ and Keyshawn, y'all both, you know, y'all my brothers from another mother. When we get all this right.
Wait, hold on a second, Byron. I don't.
No, you can come, Travis. You can.
I was just going to say. We're gonna have to. I'm feeling a little left out, Byron.
Yeah, but we're gonna have to pat you down before we bring you in there.
Hey, listen. I don't mean to exclude you. You're invited as well. Because listen, and most people that know me, you know, I love people. Period. And I'll be the first to say, you know, everybody says they don't see color. Everybody sees color, but I don't judge you by color. I judge you by the content of your character. You know what I'm saying? So everybody that I meet,
you know, every brother that I meet. That's how I basically greet everybody. You know, what's up, my brother? That's how I do. So I'm not excluding you. You can definitely, LZ, you show me pictures. I'm in the yard right now. Look, y'all can come over. We're going to have a big barbecue, and we're going to celebrate life.
Life. These pictures looking
good.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
We're going to celebrate life. We're going to celebrate black lives. We're going to celebrate all lives matter. And there's no doubt about that as well, you know. But we're going to just come together and just have a good time and just enjoy each other.
All right, party. I just hope your neighbors don't call the police on us.
No, they're cool. You know, my neighbors are so cool, man. I done got a chance to meet about four or five different neighbors. You know, they pretty much surround me. Just to my left and right and across the street. And they've come over and they've been so welcoming. And it's been a great, you know, we've been here now going on two, three weeks, you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still in the process of getting everything together. But my sanctuary is this backyard with a stogie like I had last night and a glass of wine, man. And just
sold. The pictures look right.
Try to enjoy life.
Sold. Byron, appreciate you coming on the show this morning. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. And send me your address. I'll be over in about 3 hours.
All right, bro.
I appreciate you guys.
All right, thanks, Coach. You got it. All right, let's come back. Let's talk about some of the things that Byron had to say there. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. You know, in the couple of minutes we had during the break there, I've decided that I'm offended. I've decided that because that's not the first time Byron and I have ever spoken. That he and I have done shows together. He and I have been at remotes together. And so I've decided that he either actively dislikes me or I made absolutely no impression on him over the handful of times that we've met because he invited both of you guys by name and I got left out. And I did not trust either one of you guys to invite me along the way, so I had to do it for myself.
Well, I think the Dick Fangios of the world is hurting you right now. I think that, you know, the Dick Fangios of the world is hurting you right now, Travis.
You know? So I'm guilty by association with
Travis. Maybe you jumped in. Maybe you jumped in before he said your name. Jorge, can you play the sound again? Maybe there was a pause there and you got in too quick.
All right, now, look, y'all can come over. We're going to have a big barbecue and we're going to celebrate life. We're going to celebrate life.
These pictures looking
good.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
We're going to celebrate life. We're going to celebrate black lives. We're going to celebrate all lives matter. And there's no doubt about that as well, you know. But we're going to just come together and just have a good time and just enjoy each other.
See,
I don't know.
Yeah.
You got the invite, man.
No, he said LZ and Key, and there was no Travis coming.
Well, you know, you come, it might bring some extra heat. So,
I like cigars and wine.
I'm fine.
I'll just tell him you're Steve, and you just keep your mouth shut, and we keep it moving.
Deal. Listen, LZ and Keyshawn, y'all both know y'all my brothers from another mother. When we get all this right.
Wait, hold on a second. See,
you can come, Travis. You're a guest.
I was just going to say. I'm feeling a little left out, Byron. Yeah, see, my feelings are hurt. Now what am I going to do?
Like I said, the Vic Fangios ain't helping you right now.
Here's some good news,
guys. Look, Travis, between the General Lee and Roseanne and Vic Fangio.
Yeah, let's not bring that up. First of all, you keep putting Roseanne in there, and I'm not taking credit for her at all. So you do the General Lee, whatever. But the Roseanne piece, I refuse to take any responsibility for that. Here's the good news. A Woj bomb on Twitter just a couple of minutes ago. I'll read it word for word. So the NBA is inviting 22 teams to Orlando, 13 Western Conference, 9 Eastern Conference, 8 regular season games per team, play in for the 8th seeds July 31st through October 12th, vote tomorrow to ratify the NBA's back. That, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, that is some fantastic news. Not just that what plan is in place, but a start date and everything else that the NBA, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, will start on July 31st.
Man, that's good news.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good news. Now, I just want to know when they're going to actually get practice going next and get going. That's going to feel even better once you see some practice footage 5-on-5. Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously it's going to be fast. if they're talking about July 31st, we're going to see them practicing real soon, because we've seen estimates up to 4 weeks of training camp to get guys up to speed. So we're going to start seeing these images real soon. And the other thing that I really like about this tweet that Woj just sent out is that it doesn't appear as if they're going to do that 1-16 reseeding thing. Mm-hmm. If it says play in for the 8th seed, that reads to me like they're going to keep the traditional East Conference, West Conference scenario, and we don't have to look at the prospects of maybe facing a Nets team with KD and Kyrie coming back in full strength and our very first series at the gate being a nail biter. I like the fact that they're keeping the traditional setup. I love the fact that we got some dates that we can focus in on. And I really love the fact, really, really love the fact we got this play-in for the 8th seed. Because I got to admit, the idea of seeing Zion in the NBA playoffs is tantalizing. And there's a good chance, had he not been hurt, we would have had that anyway. But now he has an opportunity to lead that team as a young player into the postseason, and seeing him versus the Lakers in that opening first round would be outstanding basketball.
Here's who would get in under the plan, guys. In the Western Conference, we know the 8 playoff teams ending with Memphis in that 8th spot. But according to Woj's tweet, they're going to invite 13. So that would include Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento. All three of those teams are only 3.5 games behind Memphis. It would also include San Antonio and Phoenix, who, if they're playing 8 regular season games, mathematically at least, would have a chance to get back in there. That would exclude Minnesota and Golden State, so their seasons are over. In the Eastern Conference, Orlando currently sits in the 8th spot in the East. They're only going to invite 9 teams from the Eastern Conference. The Washington Wizards are that 9th team. They are 5.5 games back. And then beyond that, you got Charlotte and everybody down, who is more than 8 games out of that spot. So they would not be allowed to return to play. So Charlotte, Chicago, New York, Detroit, Atlanta, and Cleveland, all of their seasons would be over under this format.
The other day I said that they, you know, we were going in circles. And the other day I said it's going to come back. It's going to wind up being a normal kind of playoff format. They're going to make it just normal like it always was, because it was just too much. It was just too much to try to switch and shift and do all the different things that people were talking about. But we talked about it, and I just felt like in the end it was going to come back to sort of being what it normally would be.
It's what it looks like, a play-in for that 8th seed. And look, the best part about it, the very best part about it, is that there's a date, that it's not just a format announcement, but there's an actual date, a July 31st start, and they'd wrap it up on October 12th. And I guess the next question would be, when do you start the 2020-2021 season? Do you do it at Christmas? How many games are you going to play there? So we've got a lot to talk about. We'll include that part of the conversation with Meta World Peace, who's scheduled to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN.